Hello and welcome to the Eastman's Predator Pros podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Nimnick, and we are back for another episode for you guys. This one's going to be a fun one. You know, Laramie Miller, some of you might know him by Laramie Sasquatch Miller, has been on TV for a long time, self-proclaimed mountain man. He's been on the podcast, before, talking about, some of the different predators and things that he's hunted over the years. But this one, we're going to talk a little bit more about mountain lion hunting. He's been doing a lot more of that this past winter. So we're going to discuss that. I have some questions, too, I want to ask him that I was thinking about from the last podcast. So I hope he's ready because there's a few questions I have that hopefully you'll find interesting as I do. So should be a good one. So stay tuned for that. I want to thank you guys for listening, and making this the number one predator hunting podcast out there. I love your guys' feedback. Those 5-star reviews on Spotify go a long ways. So I greatly appreciate all that. When I started this podcast, almost 3 years ago now, I really didn't know if I could come up with enough stuff to talk about, and what I found is, more or less it's interesting just listening to people's stories. That's one thing us as hunters, you never get tired of listening to hunting stories. So that's kind of what, I think, moving forward, I'm going to try to do more of just, not necessarily what I'd call maybe experts in the field or anything like that, but just try to get some coyote hunters on here, man. Every coyote hunter has kind of their own experiences, their own stories, maybe a little bit different ways of doing things. And I think when it's all said and done, that's probably the best way for us to figure all this out is when you start getting all this feedback and data from guys on how they do it and the success that they've had doing it, then you start drawing your own conclusions and it just makes us all better. So that'll be the goal moving forward here. For me, I'm pretty much getting ready to check out from the coyote world here. So these next handful of episodes that you're going to be listening to, I'm recording them now right at the end of the coyote season, and they'll be kind of playing throughout the summer months. Like I said, I'm checking out. I got, baseball and lawn care stuff. So, it's just kind of good just to step away and kind of re-energize and, regroup for next year. But I definitely want to keep, this content come from you guys. I know you got road trips and stuff over the summer. Some of you guys be in the tractors planting, all that kind of stuff. So definitely want to keep that content coming for you guys. So here we are. But before we jump into this podcast with Laramie, we need to thank the sponsors of this podcast, which are Hornady and Lucky Duck. Hornady, there's going to be an upcoming podcast. Going to have the guys on talking about the all new 22 Arc. So be looking for that podcast. The more and more I'm looking into this, the more and more I'm thinking it might be, all it's cut out to be. So I'm going to get a dig a lot more information out of these guys when I do get those, Hornady guys on the podcast. So be looking for that one. But, this new 22 Arc round, they call it a 62 grain ELD VT that it's shooting. Velocity wise, it's really close to, like that 53 grain VMAX I'm running, which is intriguing to me. The design of this bullet seems to be pretty legit as far as, those terminal ballistics that you get with that 53, why I love that 53 so much. So, if you go over to their website, you can actually, pull up that 62 grain ELD, and they got a handful of videos on it. You can watch it hitting some ballistic gel and watch the wound channel and wound cavity and, dissipation of the bullet within, X amount of inches through that gel and things like that. So pretty interesting. So, but once again, not that we need more coyote hunting rounds and calibers and stuff like that, but this one's got me intrigued a little bit. So stay tuned, be looking for that upcoming podcast here with the Hornady boys on the 22 Arc. Now with Lucky Duck, right now, I know if you go over to Rick's website, if you're looking to pick up a roughneck, I know he's still offering his special, I believe, which is verminatorpc.com. If you want to pick up a Lucky Duck call from him, he'll load up extra sounds on there for you and things like that. But I think he's offering a free lithium battery pack if you buy a roughneck through him. So right now, a lot of times these companies are kind of, maybe the inventory that they had left, if any, they'll potentially be running some sales here So be looking for those. You know, if you don't follow Lucky Duck on Instagram, you can do that. They'll post that, or you can go over to their website, subscribe to their newsletter, which is luckyduck.com. And then, you know, it's still early. I can't say a whole lot, but, you know, I've teamed up with Lucky Duck and The Last Stand, and we got something big coming down the pipeline. It's going to be pretty cool. A lot of work's already been done. Still a lot of work to be done. You know, stay tuned. You know, if you're interested, when this launches, can't really tell you what it is right now, but when it does, you know, you'll find it. You know, as long as you follow myself, Lucky Duck, if you're a member of my website, you can go to my website, which is coyotecraze.com. You can subscribe to the newsletter there. We'll be pumping that out. But, you know, I'm excited about this. You know, basically a culmination of 25 years of stuff. And that's all I'm going to tell you that's dumped into this, you know. So hopefully it changes the game out there. Hopefully next season there'll be more coyotes killed in this country than ever before because of this addition to the coyote hunting community. So we'll see, but stay tuned for that. As we get closer, I'll be able to tell everybody a little bit more. So excited about that. But in the meantime, like I said, you're looking to pick up, you know, a new e-call, want to give the Lucky Duck e-calls a try, you can head over to their website, which is luckyduck.com. Well, Laramie, welcome back to the podcast, man.
It's always fun to come on and chat, man. I'm excited. It'll be fun.
Hopefully you don't, we were doing a little conversing before we jumped on here. I hope you don't fall asleep on me though. It sounds like you had a long night, huh?
Yeah. No rest for the wicked and the righteous don't need none. Yeah, I had to make a midnight run and run up to Montana and grab my horses because I just moved back down to Southern Colorado.
Nice. Well, we talked about that. I say nice. I mean, there's certain reasons that's nice, other reasons that maybe not so much compared to Montana.
You know, it's crazy. Everywhere is changing. Montana's changed so much in the last 5 years. You know, the hunting up there, we have so many predators. If you look, they're trying to release grizzly bears in the Bitterroot Valley, but we already have grizzly bears. Like, it just, everywhere you go, you have these uneducated people who are trying to introduce predators or, you know, build the predator population. And it's just, crazy to me. You know, between the wolves in Colorado and now they're going to get rid of mountain lions, mountain lion hunting. Can you imagine? We won't have any deer left. You know, and I think that's their goal is they want us relying on stores. You know,
I could see that as a goal for sure.
Yeah, if you flood the population with predators, then there's not going to be any ungulates to hunt. That's what we eat. You're going to be we're going to have that fake meat like old Gates is trying to produce.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy to me. I don't know. I get so frustrated, you know, and the thing is you got a bunch of uneducated people that are trying to make decisions for guys like me and you that are out there doing it all the time. They don't ask us. You know, they go up into Denver and they ask somebody in Denver that's never even been out in the woods hardly. They're asking them.
Yeah, I always feel too when they start talking about predators, like, does it seem like there's, I mean, they do some research and some studies and stuff like that, but I don't know, you know, if you can start like Googling research on different predators, like I just take coyotes, for example, like you can't hardly find a damn thing out there, really. I mean,
yeah.
So it's like, you know, and they always want to say, oh, this is backed by science and blah, blah, blah. But I mean, what? I mean, one study? I mean, come on. That's like, there's very, seems like little information out there. So you're just going off of what everybody thinks.
Well, they play with their heartstrings, right? So,
yeah.
You know, mountain lions, wolves, bears, they think they're all, you know, cute and cuddly. And, you know, it's, they go up and they get all, like you look at Colorado, you know, reintroducing wolves last year. The dumbest thing in the world. You already have wolves coming down. They're going to make it down there regardless. But you're going to go reintroduce an apex predator when your elk populations are, I mean, did you see the winter that they just had last year?
Yeah.
They had like a 30 or 40% die off. And then you go and put wolves in that same area. But then you won't let us go shed hunt because, it's going to stress out the elk and the deer populations. But you're going to introduce wolves in there? You know, the whole thought process,
yeah,
like, there's no common sense. And,
yeah.
you know, you said the education side of things, there's, you know, they don't do, Montana did that 10-year study. They're trying to prove that wolves didn't kill as many elk and deer as people were thinking. And they found out that, believe it or not, bears are the biggest depredation on elk and deer. One
That's
black
mostly
bear,
on the fawns, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
they'll kill,
yeah,
they'll kill
I'd heard
30
that.
to 40 fawns every spring. Or, you know, calves or fawns.
Yeah.
You think of that. Every black bear is killing because they're the only animal that can smell them the first couple weeks of their life. And so, those bears, and that's when I was outfitting up in Montana, we'd just follow those bears around or follow the elk around, and you'd have them big boars and you'd watch them come in and they just steal calves left and right.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was doing a podcast with somebody and we were talking about bears, and it was that number came up that, you know, and what is there probably black bears to wolves in Montana? What is that? Like, gotta be like 3-4 to 1, probably more.
Well, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd say 4 or 5 to 1.
Yeah. See, that's, yeah. Let's not really worry about what the real problem is, I guess, you know?
Well, and that's the thing. There's a reason our forefathers got rid of predators. Because when we, here's the thing that I hate. You're a predator hunter. You love hunting coyotes. I love chasing cats. I love hunting bears. But they all need to be managed. And it's not one of those things where, oh, we'll just, like, there should never be a draw on any predator because they're the hardest animal to kill out there.
Sure.
But if we don't manage, I mean, you look like Montana, for instance, there's like a 6% survival rate on calves. No wonder the elk populations are going to heck. You know, they're stressed out. When they reintroduce the wolves, they let them just run wild for way too long. You know, the wolf's the smartest thing out there, and they're so hard to manage. Like, you have to start managing them right away. They're seeing it in Minnesota. Like, predators are so hard to manage. There should never be, in my opinion, like, you look at, there was a lot of people got upset about Utah and opening up the mountain lion hunting. You know, mountain lions are pretty much a nuisance now. And you got a lot of these guys that are, oh, we're going to kill off all the cats. No, you're not.
No.
You know, there's a renewable resource. Cats travel a long way. And there's a constant renewable resource, because in the winter, when you're hunting cats, most of the time you can't access a lot of the country that they're living in, you know? And so there's a constant renewable resource. And I think that's the best thing that, you know, you get a lot of hound guys that are upset about it, but I think it was really smart of Utah. You know, they're looking at their deer and elk herds and they're saying, hey, we're steadily declining. So we need help. We need to hunt predators more.
Yeah, well, let's face it, they're in Utah. Like, I mean, how many mountain lions are being killed off by guys that are out just randomly looking for mountain lions, like hunting mm-hmm. them, trying to call them in? Very few, right? It's the dog guys that are doing it. And any dog guy that I've ever known, like, you guys manage it yourself, right? Like, you're not like me at coyotes. Like, I go out and try to slaughter every coyote I see, you know. But you guys with lions, you know, you guys are very selective. You know, you guys love running them. You know, more so it seems like than just killing them, even though you kill them from time to time, you know, but you're looking for very specific cats to kill and things like that. So it's like, yeah, I love it. I'd love being able just to go any random guy, like, you know, let's say you are calling coyotes, like everybody always talks about calling in a mountain lion, right? Like, and for some reason, oh, you call a mountain lion in because you're calling coyotes and you can't shoot it because the season's closed or the quota's closed. Now, heck, that happens to somebody, you know, they can blast a once in a lifetime opportunity, you know,
which is correct. Yeah. Have you ever called a cat in?
No, I never have. I've never really specifically went and tried, you know. We don't have, we have a very kind of a weird season here in Nebraska. We have lions, not a lot, but they do a raffle drawing almost. Like, you pay $20 to get your name in the hat. And then if you draw it, I think they give out like maybe 200 tags, the quota's 4. You can't use dogs. You can't use anything. And then it's like if two of those are females, the season's over. So guys are just out randomly shooting mountain lions. So usually it ends up being two females that get killed. Season's over,
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So.
Well, that's another thing. Like the whole the dog situation, you get a lot of people, like in Colorado right now, they're trying to outlaw cat hunting of any kind, bobcats, mountain lions. Obviously, we haven't been able to hunt lakes for ever in Colorado, which is, you know, the population isn't there. But if they get that, it, you know, it's just one thing at a time. You know, they introduced the wolves last year. Now they're trying to do this with the cats. If they can get this done, what are they going to come after next? Coyotes? And then are they going to go to...
Well, it did start. It, technically, if you look back, it actually did start with coyotes. They actually banned coyote contests in Colorado many years ago, you know, and I always told people that all ago. That's the tip of the spear because that's the easiest thing to get pulled away. And like you just said, if you think that that's the only thing they're coming for, pretty naive, you know. So they started with that. Then you said then it's just a they have a plan in place exactly what they want to do.
Well, and like we were talking about earlier, I 100% believe that they're trying to control us, right? If you can control our food source, you can control us. Make us reliant on grocery stores and reliant on, you know, the government pretty much. I'm not one of them like doomsday guys, but anymore lately, it's like really opens your eyes because you're like, let's think about this. You know, if they can introduce all these predators and then we don't have any deer and elk to hunt because the predators are killing them all, then we have to go to the grocery store to get food. We're not self-sustaining anymore, you know? And so I think it's all a control aspect from the top, but we have so many people that are making decisions because it's little Fido, you know, it's my little puppy dog, or it's, you know, Winston the cat, or, you know, they equate it to their pets. Well, these aren't pets, you know, and that's how they're getting all these things passed. You know, it's funny, the wolf stuff in Colorado, you know, they can't find any wolves right now. They want to reintroduce 40 to 50 more, but nobody will give them to them or sell them to them. Which, thank you, Oregon. Thank you, you know, Idaho, Montana.
Oh, you don't have any more problem wolves you'd like to send to Colorado?
But I've always been kind of quiet. Obviously, I'm passionate about it, but I think more of us need to stand up and be like, hey, guys, you know, try to take the initiative and try to educate people, because the people that are making the decisions, like we talked about, are the uneducated. They're making their decisions with their, you know, pulling heartstrings. It's not science-based. It's not educational-based. It's with heartstrings, and it's going to be crazy if they get, like I say, they're just going to keep going. You know, what's next?
Yeah, you know, I've always been on the fence on this deal. Part of me realizes that those people that are totally against us, like, you're never going to change their thoughts on us, right? Like, I don't think they will never understand why we like to hunt, why we like to kill stuff, why we do what we do, you know? But I think there's that big chunk of the middle population, the ones that make that's where the vote really probably comes in, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so how are we changing those? But even then, sometimes I'm like, let's just say me killing coyotes, for example, right? I mean, I just love killing coyotes. Like, I don't know how to, like, somebody that has no idea, has never done this outdoor stuff that we do. I'm sure you're the same with, I mean, I think you just, there's something about just killing is part of it, right? Like, you have to, I guess I don't know any hunters that, I'm not going to say you enjoy the killing part, but it's part of it, right? So I just don't know how you
it's so hard
that
to explain this. Yeah. It's
somebody
so hard
that's
to
in the middle that could care less one way or the other, how to get them to see it from our side, other than them just thinking, damn, these guys are just like bloodthirsty. That's all they want to do is kill. Well, I mean, I guess you could look at it that way. So I'm like, you know what? Are we almost better off sometimes shutting our mouths and just kind of letting know? But the anti-hunting side is super good at, you know, convincing those people and showing those, you know, the fluffy bear,
look at
the fluffy mountain lion.
Yeah, look at everything, man. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. you look at right now, the 0.01% is making decisions. I mean, you look at like Bud Light and all the stuff that's happening in the last couple of years. They're catering to that very, very small percentage because they're loud. You know, and that's where I've always been quiet. I always just go do, you know, I have a reverence about what I do and I go do my thing. And but anymore, I think we have to speak up. I think we have to. And the other thing that I hate is you get, whether it's bow hunters and rifle hunters or hound hunters and spot and stalk hunters or, you know, whatever it is, we all need to be on the same page. We're fighting the same fight. I hate when people start bickering in between, you know, us as a hunting community and an outdoors community. I hate that bickering. You know, if it's legal, you should be all for it.
Yep.
As an outdoorsman, as a hunter, as, you know, it, as soon as we start dividing and fighting amongst each other, it just gives them that much more leeway. You know, and then you have things like Colorado and Washington and Oregon and even Montana. They're taking away stuff bit by bit. You know, like I'm a huge trapper.
Yeah.
Colorado, you haven't been able to use anything but a live trap in Colorado for years. Which is why.
Yeah. Yeah. Wasn't made by us, decisions by us, that's for sure. You know, I said that a long time ago about these coyote contest thing. You know, they started banning coyote contests, you know, Colorado, then it went down, New Mexico got banned, Arizona got banned, you know, California. I saw that exact same thing when that legislation was being pushed through to like the game and fish commissioners and stuff like that. There were lots of hunters that said, I don't care. You know, I don't contest hunt coyotes. You know, I don't think that's good anyway, you know? So, you know, and that's, and I kept thinking to myself, I don't care whether you think it's cool or not. You should be on our side. Like there's a line in the sand right now and it's either 100%. You're on one side or the other. And when you say that, oh, I don't care about that, then that puts you on the other side of the line technically. So, you know.
Yep. And, you know, that's like I was just saying. We have to fight together and we have to band together because you have all these antis that, I mean, they're going to keep coming and they're actually smart and they got a lot of money behind them. So if we don't band together, there's no telling what they're going to take away. Bit by bit, they'll take our entire lifestyle away.
Well, you might be moving back to Montana before you know it.
Yeah. Oh, no, this world is crazy, isn't it, buddy?
No, it is. Just, it is.
You got people spending almost $1 million on governor's tags and you got, but we can't band together to, you know, get something like this off the ballot.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty wild.
Yeah. It is. It's crazy.
So was your lion season good?
It was.
This year?
Yeah, this year was actually, I mean, I was in the middle of moving a lot, but we killed quite a few, killed a couple of really nice big toms. It's still open, but of course the weather, this winter's been crazy as far as weather-wise for us. You know, Colorado, Montana's been cool, but we haven't really had any snow. Colorado, I haven't hardly had any snow. You know, it's been real muddy, which mud is the worst thing you want when you're trying to cat hunt with hounds, but we still did pretty good. We killed eight cats in February. And then, like I said, it's still open right now. If I can get either dry ground or get another good snow, I'll be out there trying to get more. How was your coyote season?
The mud stuff, is that just because it's tough to get around up in some of that country with the mud, or is that something with the dogs
and tracking? Yeah, it's for the dogs tracking, and, you know, it's nasty to drive around, but the scent leaves so fast when you have mud, because that mud will freeze. That mud will, if it freezes, and then when it thaws, the scent's gone. You know, and so, it's really hard on the dogs. You know, every once in a while, you'll get a good, if it doesn't freeze, you can get a good track in the mud, and then they can run it, but if it freezes at all, it just, it's gone. As soon as it starts warming up and that sun hits it, it's gone.
Which is pretty much guaranteed this time of year. It's going to freeze it in the dark night, and then as soon as the sun starts hitting it, you know, see ya. I didn't know that about that. That's interesting.
Yeah, you'd rather have, I mean, I'd rather have perfectly dry ground to run on than mud. It's easier for my dogs.
The one time I did run lions, it was dry ground. It was late like this, like in March, April, and I just went for the day with a guy, you know, a buddy of mine, Colton Gillum, and we just said, let's just give it a shot, you know. We ended up treeing one. It was pretty cool. It was a mom and two kittens, but they were all like full-grown kittens, so it was really cool. Like, it was like, for somebody that never really seen a mountain lion, it was like three full-grown mountain lions sitting up on this branch, you know. The kittens were sleeping. The mom, she was pissed off, man. She did not want – she ended up bailing out, and the dogs took off after her. I got all pissed off, you know. He's like, God damn, you know, because he knew we weren't going to kill it. So he didn't want his dogs messing with it because he knew they were going to get tore up. And it ended up cornering this mom cat in this boulder field, and a couple of his dogs got ripped. He's like shocking them, trying to get them just pissed off.
Yeah. When you get a female with kittens, there's no telling. Last year, I caught a female with kittens inside a culvert. You know what I'm talking about? Ooh. Oh, it was. Yeah, my old dog, see, he's 14 now, but he got inside there and he got tore up. Just not as young as he used to be, couldn't get out of the way. Plus, it was inside that culvert. So, got hold of one of them kittens, and then mama got a hold of him, and it was not good. But how crazy is it when you see them in a tree, their eyes? They literally just like look right through you.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like that. It was funny because I remember that mom, she could give two shits. We were standing there. Like she was just locked onto those dogs, man. Like, you know, she, like you said, when she did kind of look our way, it was like just right past you. Like she didn't even care. You're standing there.
Like,
you know?
They look right into your soul.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
You end up carrying your own suture kit and stuff like that. Do you end up suturing up your dogs out there in the field?
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty common thing with lion hunters, huh?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny because I've had more dogs tore up hog hunting than I have anything else.
Really?
I've had to sew more dogs hog hunting. You would think, you know, bears or cats or, you know, I've had to sew up quite a few dogs, but hog hunting is the worst. Hogs are nasty.
I do. Well, I guess I do see this. Some of them, they wear those vests and those neck collars, don't they? Mm-hmm. Like, almost like a Kevlar dam.
Yep.
Because of the tusks. Yeah.
Yeah. I started hog hunting. I've always ran dogs, right? But I started hog hunting with a buddy of mine in Arkansas. He's a crazy old timer. Tell you how crazy he was. I watched him one of the first times I went hog hunting with him, and we're running. He's actually the one that got me started running Catahoula Cur dogs. So I mix all my hound with Catahoula Cur because of him. But he used to jump those hogs. Because a pig, when it sees you, most of the time, it'll run straight at you. And then it tries to hook you. He'd take two steps and jump over the top of them. Except for one day, he got caught from his ankle all the way to his knee. It just filleted it open like he took a knife. Them hog tusks, you don't realize how sharp they really are, but man, they'll cut you bad.
Wow. were you guys doing it with the knives where you like pin them down and just walk up and like,
yeah. Well, we used to catch them, so he had these little bitty handcuffs, and so you'd handcuff a front leg and a back leg, and then you duct tape the tusks, and we'd throw them on the mules and we'd go sell them to some of them ranches down in Texas. And so, this is when I was like 20 years old. We used to go down there all the time. I'd spend 3 or 4 months every year in Texas or Arkansas.
Were those ranches wanting them to like put them on their ranch so somebody else could pay to come shoot them? Kind of that kind of a deal?
Yep. Yeah, we get $500 a piece for them, and it was just fun for us.
Yeah.
good times.
With you running dogs up in Montana, have you ever had any run-in with wolves? on your dogs?
Yeah.
I've seen some, I've heard some stories and seen some pictures of that stuff, man.
I've been very lucky. I never lost one to wolves in, the 15 years I was running up there. I never lost one to wolves, but I had quite a few close encounters to where I used to try to stay with my dogs all the time up there because of the wolves, and they come in and start howling. And I had like my old dog, I sat there and watched him fight a wolf, and I took off. I'm running down the mountain. Yeah. He got beat up a little bit, but I've got lots of friends that I actually sold. So I sold four dogs to this young kid, and it's like the second time he took them out, wolves come in and killed all four dogs.
Before he could get there, huh?
Just
get out running ahead of you too far. And by the time, in that country, it may take you 30 minutes to make it a mile, to get to them.
Well, and that's it. You got to be very careful in wolf country where you turn loose and make sure that you get around, because them wolves hear them dogs and they're there.
Well, there's a call that, I've heard of guys using this. Somebody out there went and recorded just a bunch of hound dogs and put it on their damn e-call, and I've heard of guys using it to call in wolves, is because you hear that same story so many times that the wolves hear the hound dogs and then here they come,
I don't remember. I think we talked about it last time we had that podcast. I shot them two wolves in camp with my pistol.
Yeah. When you're filming your self adventure out there. Yeah.
Yep. That was crazy. There's like eight of them just come running right in. And they're tough to call normally.
I'm curious because, there's a book, there's a book called I think it's called Coyote America is the name of this book. And it goes through like the history of wolves, right? Like way back, like shit, 10,000 years ago, kind of, and their relationship with wolves. And it talks about how we are basically able to eradicate wolves, right? Because of just the wolves' demeanor, their nature. They weren't scared of anything. They were the top dog. Coyotes have always been like skittish and just adaptable, and just because they've always been looking over their shoulder for wolves, kind of a deal. So I always think back to that, guys that have called in wolves, it seems like a lot of guys try to howl them, and I've never been in, I've been wolf hunting up in Idaho a couple times. We never did get on wolves to really give it a shot. I am going to go up to northern Alberta next year, call wolves. So I'm going to put this to the test, should be lots of wolves to hopefully call in. But I really feel like some of just those super aggressive, like coyote fights and things like that should work. I mean, you talk about a big alpha wolf, right? Why are they running in to kill these hound dogs, right? It's like, no, you're not coming in my area. Any other dog whatsoever, here we come,
They're just so smart. Like, how a coyote, adapts so fast.
Yeah.
But a wolf's like double that. Like trapping, for instance. If you're trapping wolves, if you catch the alpha, you can catch the whole pack. But if you don't catch that alpha in that first, you won't catch another wolf out of that pack. Not that year. Because they learn, that alpha learns so fast, and they get educated so quick. It was always crazy to me to see how much different they were than coyotes. Because they just adapt, and they're so smart. But like you say, they're very, very territorial. And that's how I've always called them in, is howling. And then I usually always got an elk call, diaphragms. I'll do like a pup in distress and howl. And I mean, I've called in a lot of wolves that way.
Yeah. That's going to be my tactic. Hell with it. I'm trying it,
There you go. That's why
I come back with my tail tucked between my legs, but or I may call in a whole pack and just unleash fury on it,
Yeah. That's it. I tell you what,
the alpha first, right? That's the moral of the story. You got to knock down the alpha first. The rest of them might stand around. They don't even know what to do. They're waiting for their leader to take them somewhere, but they don't have a leader anymore.
That, that's one of the eeriest things, is you'd be out there elk hunting, sitting there calling, and then them wolves start howling. And I've called them in for clients, and the whole pack, 7, 8, 10 wolves come in, and they just surround you. And you can see them kind of, usually it's in brush.
Yeah.
I had one. I, I had one guy, this wolf pops out, he's 20 yards in front of us. And the whole pack is right around us just howling, you know, and it's just that, you know, that deep guttural howl where you feel it inside your chest. This guy, I mean, he freaked out. The wolf pops out. He's got a wolf tag. Like, he was shaking so bad, he couldn't even get it in the scope. And I'm like, well, there's your opportunity. But
there's your opportunity. Yeah, there you go. You pissed that one away.
Yeah. I almost shot it with my pistol, but I was behind him, so I couldn't.
Oh, shit. No, it's history. At all your lion hunts this year, any of them kind of stand out?
We killed a really big tom, and it was like a 12 and a half mile round trip, and it was kind of muddy, and we chased that sucker 7 hours, 6-7 hours. Dogs just, you know, cold trailing because he was rutting, and so he went on a big long scrape line, and he was making scratches all over the place. And we literally ran him. I mean, we turned loose on him at like 7 o'clock in the morning. Didn't catch him till almost six. But
was he that really far big, ahead of you guys, think, or was he running hard?
He was just going all night.
Oh, he just didn't.
He just moved. So all night.
He had a hell of a good head start on you when you guys started.
Yeah. Yep. But other than that,
how big was that one?
About 175 pounds.
Wow.
Big, good Tom. You know, it's always funny because you get all these guys, oh, 200-pound Tom. So I was lucky enough to be on the Colorado state record. And that is the only cat I've ever seen 200 pounds. But like Montana, you'll never find a cat that's 200 pounds in Montana. The country's too rough. You know, down here, southern Colorado, northern New Mexico, they're eating a lot of elk. They don't have to move as far. You get some bigger weight-wise cats, but... you know, people don't realize 150-pound cat is, I mean, that's a stud.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose what a lion, how many pounds of elk meat can they fit in their stomach?
Oh, yeah, like 30,
I mean,
40 pounds.
That's the difference between killing a 190-pound cat and 150-pound. It could be the same cat, right? It's just one just got done, you know, leaving the carcass. One's been hunting for 4 days, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's great. It's always... I love cats and seeing them and seeing how majestic, and it's amazing. You get a 150-pound cat, he'll kill a full grown bull elk. We actually ran a, he was like 155 pounds. He'd killed a full grown bull moose in Montana. Shit. I mean, you're talking a 1400-pound animal, 1300-pound animal, and a little 150-pound cat kills it. It was pretty dang impressive.
That is damn.
But then they're afraid. But then they're afraid of a 40-pound hound dog. You know, it's crazy to me. But they're so amazing, and I think, you know, running cats has made me such a better hunter, because, you know, following your dogs and seeing where those cats move and how they work ridges and, you know, how they move through the woods because they're hunting all the time.
Yep.
You know, it has helped me so much to become a better ungulate hunter, you know, elk and deer, and it's just the way to move in the woods. It's pretty neat.
That's interesting. I would say that about anything predator wise. Like if you can kill, like if you're a good predator hunter, like
you can kill anything.
Be honest, you can kill anything. You know,
yeah.
And I'm not just saying that because I hunt predators. I mean, that's just, you know, you get good, it will help you become a better.
100%. You know, you think the predators, they rely on their skill every day. They have to perfect that skill of hunting every day or they don't eat. You know, a deer and elk, yeah, they're always trying to evade and whatever, but they go eat grass.
Yep.
A predator, a coyote, a mountain lion, a bear, you know, bears are omnivores most of the time, but like a mountain lion, they don't eat anything but meat. They have to kill at least a deer a week. That's 56 deer a year.
Yeah.
You get pretty good at it.
Damn right.
We killed a bull elk one time you know, you always hear stories, but we killed a bull elk one time that had a canine broke off right in between his skull cap, in between his horns.
No kidding.
He had a mountain lion canine broke off completely in his skull.
That is wild.
And obviously, yeah, he was still alive. We shot that bull, and I'm caping it, and I'm like, what in the heck? And I pulled that canine right out of the top of his head.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That is wild.
Rough world out there.
Oh, man. <For Brad. laughs> What are most of those guys shooting those lions with? A variety of about anything?
Yeah, you want a smaller caliber. Their hide stretches. Like, you'll blow a hole in it if you want to shoot it with something big. So I always tell people, like, a 223, you know, something smaller like that, 204, great rounds for cats.
Makes sense. I would think, yeah, because what's a – you took that 150-pound lion, like, the depth of its chest probably. If you were looking like a chest-on lion from one side of the ribs to the other side, what are we talking, 12 inches maybe?
Not even.
Not even, probably.
On a big, on a big tom, it'll be 10 to 12 inches. But most of your cats, you're probably, I mean, they're not that wide.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably a little, at least 12.
Yeah, so like I said, you want something that's going to, you know, a big, I say this about shooting coyotes all the time. You don't want a bullet that's going to just blow right through them. You know, you can create a, like you said, like a 204, something small that's going to just, you know, create this massive wound channel. They probably bleed out pretty quick, just like a coyote probably does.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you create
90% of the time, 90% of the time, they're dead 10 seconds after hitting the ground. Because cats have small lungs, right? So,
yeah,
they can run fast and they're built for explosion, but they don't have the endurance. Their lungs are smaller. Yeah. And so it's, you know, when you hit them in the lungs, it doesn't take long at all.
You know, I've heard that from other lion guys. It's just, it amazes me, like, that's how they were built, right? Like,
yeah,
you'd think they'd be like, just I could chase things down forever and outrun it, but it's like, just nope. It's a guy said the dogs, nope, if you get on one, that's why it's easy to kind of get them, right? Because they can't just, the dogs can run way further than the cat can, right? Because the dogs have
dogs will run capacity all day long, and a cat, you know, a cat, they it's funny because most of the time when you get a cat in a tree, you'll see him up there and he's just sitting there, you know, panting so hard, you know, but the dogs, though, they got that deep chest cavity and they'll run all day long. But a cat, he'll run really fast for about 200 yards. And then that's all he's got. And then he'll have to stop and walk and he's got to catch his breath. You know, most of the time, like, you'll get them when they jump. They don't go very far because the dogs are right on them.
So I'm going to start telling people when I'm huffing and puffing out there, I got cat lungs. That's what I'm going to tell them.
Yeah, just tell them you're built like a cat.
I'm built like a cat. So I was going to add, I don't know if I asked you this last time, as far as eating mountain lions.
I love it.
I'm sure you'd be, okay, I knew you're going to tell me you love it. All right. Give me your, I want to hear your favorite lion recipe.
Well, I love taking the back straps and wrapping them in bacon. You know, I'll marinate them.
Oh, come on. That's like what everybody does to everything to make them taste good.
Well, exactly. But the taste is a lot like pork. So like the hams, I'll slow cook them and make like pulled pork out of them. Because they're,
you're talking,
they're
about like
enough.
Taking the, I mean, I'm not a big game hunter. So you got that ham, you talking about like a hind quarter, like a chunk off the hind quarter? Okay.
Yeah, take the meat off the hind quarter and you just cook it in a slow cooker or crock pot. And it, I mean, it'll just
like
fall
pulled pork
apart.
Then, huh? Kind of like pulled lion.
It's got a little bit sweeter taste than pork.
Really?
And obviously it doesn't have the fat. You know, that's why you got to be careful cooking cat because it'll dry out really easy. You know, like when you're cooking backstrap, you have to get it to that 165 because they do have trigonosis, but you don't want to overcook it because it, you know, their fat content is so low, it'll dry out really easy.
That's similar to, I cook some pork tenderloins on my grill every now and then, you know, same kind of situation.
Same thing.
Not a lot of fat on there, but if you overcook it, then it's like, yeah, this sucks.
And they look the same. It's a light colored meat. So when you pull a backstrap out, it's that light pink. And then when you cook it up, it cooks up white, like a pork loin.
So when you shoot a lion, are you required to take the meat? I mean, is it like a waste thing, like an elk? You can't just obviously go shoot an elk, cut the horns off, and leave it out there. You get, you know, the waste deal, right?
Every state's
but for
different.
Lion, every state's different, huh?
Yeah, so like Montana and Colorado, you have to take it out whole. You know, you have to take all edible pieces. New Mexico, Idaho, skin it. You need to bring just the hide out because they're considered a predator. You don't have to bring the meat out. Huh. Same way with the bear.
Yeah. Is that the preferred method? I mean, or some guys are like, no, we're hiking this thing out of here because I want it, the whole thing.
I mean, I'll always take meat with me. Like even my hunters, my clients, when they kill one, if they don't want the meat, I'll take it out with, you know, I'll take it home for myself.
So what are we talking? I mean, after you debone a lion out in the field, I mean, we're talking like 30, 40 pounds of meat, maybe?
Not even. I mean, I usually just take the back straps because
the
quarters are so, you know, obviously Colorado, Montana, you have to take them out. So I take them out, but they're tough. And the only way you can really cook them is slow cook them, do like pulled pork style.
Yeah. Does calf have a tenderloin in it?
Yeah, they're not very big. They're not even worth messing with.
Really, just little dinky ones. Huh?
Yeah, they're just little bitty guys.
Like a chicken tenderloin.
Yeah. Yeah, like a chicken tender. Yeah, that's funny. No, I love. So I ate wolf.
No, come on. Seriously?
I cooked a wolf hindquarter up on. When I was
that
back
on that
there.
Show when he killed one of those?
Uh-huh.
Oh God.
I slow
Let's hear about this.
I slow cooked it on the coals. I should have cooked it way longer. It was so tough. It actually tasted all right, but it was so stringy. Like, you know how you eat like five bites and then you spend the rest of the night picking it out of your teeth.
Yeah. Yeah. Certain types of jerky out there.
Yeah. But no, I ate a whole quarter. It surprised me because
how come didn't take the back strap. How come you didn't try the back strap?
Because they were very skinny. Oh. They didn't have much back strap left. I just pulled the hind quarter off, and like I said, I stuck it right on the coals and cooked it on the coals for like an hour. And that was
just
the first.
You just laid it right
had.
On the fire.
Uh huh.
Like, do you have to, like, scrape that? Like, when you pulled it off there, do you have to, like, skin that? Or you just eat the crust like it's...
You've never cooked on coals?
No.
Dude, it's amazing. If you let them get just, like, where they're just starting to turn white, the coals.
Okay, yeah. I know what you're talking about there.
You don't get all the ash and stuff on your meat like you would think. You just cook them right on the coals.
Yeah, in my head, I'm like, man, this thing's going to be covered with ash and coal and... I mean,
yeah, no. I love cooking on coals.
Hey, I was going to ask you, did you ever see that video of Steve Rinella that when he cooked that coyote down in Arizona? He did something similar where he like burned the hair off the damn thing first, like, and then just roasted it on the coals. I was like, that alone right there would have made me like, I don't know.
Imagine the smell.
Never touched that thing. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah, that was like the weirdest way. I thought, if we're going to cook a coyote, like, why are we burning the hair off this thing first?
God. Did you see when he ate that monkey and he was eating monkey brain?
Didn't see that one.
Oh, like it was very graphic. He was down in South America somewhere, and he was eating monkey brain. Like, they cook the head in the fire.
Same thing, he just threw it on the coals. Just
tossed
it down in there, huh?
Yeah. And then they cracked his head open and ate the brains. And I was like, I'm one of them guys. Like, I went through a phase where I had to try. Like, I've eaten possum, coon, and armadillo, and I wanted to try everything.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could eat monkey brain. It'd be hard.
They did that on one of those Indiana Jones movies. Uh-huh. Sitting on the table and they pull the top of the skull off there, you know?
Oh. Yeah.
But out of all that weird stuff you tried, what was one of those that was like, you were like, oh, this actually is better than I thought?
Armadillo, believe it or not.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So how did you, so I got a chance. I shot a couple armadillos a long time ago when I was down in Georgia. Like, how did you clean it? Like, first of all, what did you do to like get to the meat? Just cracked it? Like, what is it? Or is it even.
Oh, you just put the whole thing. So this old timer down in Texas showed me how. And I mean, you cook it with the guts and everything in it. And then it's like almost like a soup.
Like you turn it over and use its little shell as the,
bowl
or what?
Huh?
Like you use the shell as the bowl, you just roll it over?
Yeah. Then you just pick it out and eat the pieces of meat. And that's how we did it anyway. And it wasn't like I was thinking it was going to be horrible, right? Make them dirty little suckers. No, it wasn't bad at all.
I was afraid to even touch them because they were telling me about leprosy and all this other stuff. Uh-huh. I was like, I'm just going to shoot them and leave them lay. I'll walk up and look at it, but, you know.
Oh,
armadillo.
That might be half my problem.
There you go. You got something from the armadillo. It's wild. Armadillo.
What's the craziest thing
you've even heard of it? Crazy compared to that, I can tell you that. You know, when I was in the Marine Corps, I was overseas. I was in the Middle East for a while. You know, back in like the late 90s, and I ate some. Probably goat or something. I don't know. I mean, and that's not even crazy, right? Like, I did eat a deer eyeball for $20 one time at deer camp back when I used to, you know, but I couldn't finish it. I didn't even make the, because as soon as we had the skulls there, you know, and we'd got to drinking a few beers and we come up with this bet. So I cut this eyeball out, you know, and it deer eyeball's bigger than you think because it goes mm-hmm. back in the socket, right? So this thing was like, at least golf ball size. And so I popped it in my mouth and I was good until it popped in my mouth. The whatever that vitreous fluid or whatever they want to call it, that was so bad that I was that close to making the money, but I just spit it out and it was over. So technically I didn't eat it, but.
You still did. It was in your
did.
Mouth.
Yeah. I put it in my mouth. That counts, I guess.
Oh man.
No, I mess with people a lot. As many coyotes as I shoot, there's people around my like hometown and stuff, like they don't understand what I do. So they always ask what I do with them. You know, that's like the first thing that anybody asks, like, oh, you shoot coyotes? Well, what do you do with them? Oh, I usually eat them. That's what I usually tell them, like, if I want to mess with them a little bit, you know? And then they're, like, looking at me like, really, you know? And then you just start making up some bullshit story, you know, about how you cook them up and stuff, you know? And we'll go to, like, a family deal sometimes or a potluck dinner, or you know what I'm saying, something for something, and I'll bring mm-hmm. some meat of some kind, you know? And I'll just tell people it's coyote, you know? You should really try it, you know? And they just look at me because they believe me that it is, but it's really not, but.
Yeah. Isn't it funny? So, like, killing bears all the time, right? You know, you get the penis.
Yeah.
And so I always have stir sticks around the house. And, you know, you'll get people, what is this?
It's you really penis. Want to know?
Yeah. Oh. Good old gag gifts. I gave one to my ex-wife's mother one time. I gave her.
I'm sure that was a fan favorite.
Oh, yeah. She loved me, but not really.
Hey, there probably is a market out there. I bet you there's people like in the big city that would pay top dollar for something like that just so they could have it around and show their little friends about, oh, look at this. You know?
100%. You're going to be looking on Google here in a little bit.
Hey, I'm already on my phone right now.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
So I was going to ask you this too. So with you being around lions a lot, have you ever actually tried to call a lion? Like just went out and, you know, started.
I've tried. So I've never had any luck. I called one in one time, but he never, like, he didn't come all the way in. I saw him like 150 yards out and he sat there, you know, cats are, they're super. Yeah. They'll just sit there and watch. But I have a buddy that does it consistently. Like, he calls cats in consistently, and he hunts here in Colorado, and then he goes to Nevada and hunts right on the border there where you can hunt at night.
Yeah.
and he calls in a lot of cats.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what would be your, like, with just your knowledge of cats and things, like, what would be your go-to? Like, if you, if somebody was listening to this and they said, you know what, I think I know where there's some lions or a lion, I'd love to go try to call one in. Like, what would be your strategy if you were going to, you know, or the times that you've done it, you know, what was the strategy?
Well, like I said, they come in so slow. You know, you're going to sit there for an hour. You know, if you actually want to call a cat in, you know, you need to sit there for a long time. We've always done, you know, some kind of distress call. But I know some guys down in Texas that they'll go out and they use that female mating call. You know, the real yowly yowl.
Yeah.
And they have luck calling in cats down there with that. But, like, you know, if it was just me, if I was going to go out, yeah, I'd probably do the distress. Yeah.
As far as your setup, so it seems to me, like, in the big part about coyote, calling coyotes is it's not so much the sound you're using. It's a lot more of exactly where you're set up at, you know, where you set up at. Is there a coyote there? Obviously, that's very similar with any predator you're calling in. You've got to be within a, you know, their bubble, right? You got to be within close enough where they feel like they want to come. Obviously, they got to be able to hear it. They got to want to come that far. You know, that's always been the challenge to any kinds of cat, right? Whether it's a bobcat or a mountain lion, there's just not that. They're not as dense as coyotes, right? So it's just the chance of you setting up. What would you specifically look for, like, terrain-wise, knowing what you know, chasing cats and seeing where cats move and stuff? Like, if you're in the middle part of the day, you're like, all right, we're gonna go make a couple lion stands somewhere, what kind of terrain would you be looking for?
Man, you go find the bluffy areas. You know, you would probably always want to be above a cat just because of how, you know, they're gonna sit and watch a lot. Yep. You know, so try to, you know, those
give them the advantage
lines,
right?
Yeah, those bluffy ridge lines and stuff like that, I would think would be your best bet. That guy that I know that does it consistently, that's what he does. He'll go find these big bluffy areas where, you know, cats love to hang out in them rocks. They'll sun just like your house cat. They'll lay up on them rocks in the middle of the day. And, you know, so getting up in some of that country would be your best bet, probably.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, there was some guy a long time ago, back when I told you Nebraska opened their mount, I did the very first time I applied for that. I bought some lion sounds from this guy up in, I think it was Oregon. He had some pretty good recordings, and that was what you said. It was like, you know, whistles and freaking weird lion sounds like that, you know?
It's pretty crazy. You'll have to go on YouTube. There's this guy that catches this female in a trap, and she's yelling. Like, I've only ever heard it, as many cats as I've been around, I've only ever heard it once myself.
Like in a leg hole trap, he got it?
No, he caught it in a live trap.
Oh, a big live trap. Oh, shit.
But that female was sitting there doing her mating call. Wow, wow. And you'll have to go look at it. It is amazing. Like, it sounds like a little kid screaming.
Okay.
Like, at the top of their lungs. And I, like I said, I've heard it one time. I live around mountain lions every day.
Yeah.
And I've only ever heard it one time. And it was when I was probably 16 years old. It was out in the field at my house, the ranch that I grew up on, like middle of the night, like midnight, 1 o'clock. And that cat was just out there, just wow, 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 wow. And I mean, like I said, it sounds like a little kid screaming. It's the creepiest sound, but it's pretty neat. You should just Google it on, or, you know, go Google mountain lion screaming. And it's pretty amazing how loud.
I suppose that guy was in shock. He probably heard it before he even got up to the trap, I suppose.
Oh, 100%.
He was like, oh.
Yeah, it does sound like a Sasquatch coming after you or something.
You do, you still filming for the shows? Do some of that this winter?
Yeah. Yeah, so I actually started a new show. I moved everything to Pursuit. That way I can put it right on YouTube. And okay. So I got a new show coming
finally,
out.
You're finally seeing the light, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was hard-headed, and that took me a while, but I guess I got to come across to the bad side.
Yeah, welcome to YouTube, Laramie.
So yeah, I'll do a. It's a lot more family oriented. Like I'm bringing my kids into it, and nice. My wife, and I'm going to show some of my guiding stuff. But there's going to be a lot of teaching, so it's going to be educational as far as. You know, like my wife's really big into sourdough bread and canning and all that stuff. And so we're going to show some of that on the show and, you know, just more of a lifestyle rather than, you know, I'm still me. I'll still do my mountain man stuff, but it's going to be a little more of everything and more of my life, I guess.
Yeah. I like that. I think they appreciate the educational value and stuff, you know, I really do.
Well, that's
like
why
I'm so saturated with all the other kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's getting bigger and bigger. Everybody's seeing every which way to shoot something out there.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you can only see so many big deer die, so many big elk die. Like you got to have something different to be able to show the viewer and teach them and keep their interest. And so that's, you know, that's why I decided to change it up a little bit and change the platform is because, man, people want to feel like they know you. And so the more that, you know, I can bring the whole family in and they can see that side of me and that side of, you know, my wife and my kids and stuff like that, I think it's going to be better and better.
Well, one thing too, I've realized on the educational stuff too, is let's face it. I mean, just because you have a TV show of some kind doesn't mean really anything, honestly,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So having most guys don't have the ability to teach or really communicate what they're doing. And if you are one of those guys, then, you know, to me, that's always just, that'll set your show apart, you know.
100%, what, you yeah.
Know. Yeah, that'll be cool. Nice. So Pursuit.
Yeah, you were nicer than I would have been. A lot of these guys that have TV shows have no business having T-shirts.
No. Yeah, that's it, like the ease of, you know, entry, you know, the barrier to entry is pretty easy to, like, I think there is this false narrative out there that, to that, maybe the just I'm gonna say average hunter, but just the hunter that watches this kind of stuff, right? The outdoorsman that doesn't really know the behind the scenes stuff, right? It's like they're kind of like, oh my gosh, this guy must, you know, nah, he could have just had a thick pocketbook, you know, and paid the, you know.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing, you know, the TV industry is so saturated nowadays because you have everybody, I mean, everybody's got a YouTube channel, everybody's got Instagram and they got Facebook and they got, you know, it's been tough on the TV side. You used to be able, if you had a TV show, you could walk into any company and get a sponsorship, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
When I started,
yep.
You literally walk in and if you had a TV show on a national network, you could get sponsored. Now it's almost impossible, you know, and then they just want to give you product and I can't pay my cameraman with product. And, you know, so it's become a very cutthroat industry just because there's so many people out there doing it now, you know? And so having that educational style and the knowledge is going to help, but it's really hard on the sponsor side.
Yeah. One thing I've noticed too, is that I do think the educational stuff's really good, but the sponsors don't watch these shows.
Exactly.
You know, like you could be sponsored by every, like you could be have 8 sponsors for your show. And honestly, if you went and talked to the marketing directors and said, what'd you like? They're like, they don't have time to watch the shows. They don't really care. You know, they're looking at some numbers really coming back. And it's like, so they don't, the thing I don't like about that is they don't know the difference between your show and the next guy's because they don't watch it to see, oh, wow, this guy, you know, he really does a great job of people really, you know, whatever it may be, whatever.
Well,
that's
why I've struggled so much. I'm not a salesman, man. I kill shit for
it. Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not a salesman.
And so I can't go in there. You know, you get some guy that can go in there and talk that great talk and you know, he gets this relationship and contract for a sponsorship and, you know, he may not be as qualified, but he can talk that talk. And it, you know, it's just,
Yeah, it's a weird deal. You know, I, like I said, I've I kind of got in about the same time, maybe about, you know, 12, 14 years ago when I was doing DVDs starting, you know, before that. It's kind of the same thing. Like, you just, it's a whole different side of things. And you hear it, you probably get the same guys. Oh, I'd love to start my own TV show. You know, I'm sure you get those kind of questions. You know, what do I need to do to start my own show?
I always giggle because you get people, look, I love my lifestyle. I love, you know, being able to do what I've done. I would never take it back. But you get these guys that come on and, oh man, you got the life. Or, you know, I want to have, you know, I wish I could have my own TV show. It's not all as cracked up to be. I mean, it's a lot of work, and you don't, the money isn't, it used to be. They used to do really well, but
yeah,
you have to adapt now. You can't just do TV.
Yep.
Because just TV is not going to pay the bills. Which, that's our whole world. I mean, look, used to be you made $100, $120,000 a year. You're doing really well. Now you're still in poverty.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Well, if you ain't showing the cleavage on Instagram right now, then, you know.
Yeah.
Sasquatch only tank tops fans. Out there, Laramie, a little bit. Just yeah. Squeezing it
together. Sasquatch only fans, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, guys, you know, like, it's tough for guys that have been in it for a long time now. You know, it's just changing. Yeah, it's just so different. You know, just in well, the like last going to four, shot 5 years. Show and stuff,
talking to everybody. Everybody says the same thing. I mean, I started in 2007 is when I started TV. And, you know, now every single person you talk to Ike, talk to, it's a totally different game than it used to be.
Yep.
You know, and it's a lot harder. You have to do more now than you used to.
Yeah. The toughest part for me to try to relay to guys is that it's, you know, you're not going to, the chances of you making enough to make a living off of this is very slim, right? So you're going to have some sort of other job. And it's very hard to have a job that you can break away from for 3 or 4 or 5 months to do what you want to do and then just come back to this job, right? Like,
yep.
That's the tricky part about it is like, and so most guys are like, no, I can't pull it off. And so, you know.
Well, it's like me right now. The only reason I do TV still, I mean, some of them, when I get originals like The Trail, well worth it. You know, I make decent money on that, but it's advertising for my outfitting business.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Yep.
You know, so, you know, having that.
Oh, can you hear me? We audio cut out on us there a second. There we go. Are we back on now? Audio difficulties? Uh-oh. We were so close to the end, and now the audio went to hell on us. I'm going to blame it on that Colorado cell signal down there. Oh, it says we're good. Well, nothing.
There we go.
Oh, there we go. We're back.
Oh, somebody was trying to.
They were like, these guys are talking about, oh, now it's back doing it. They're like, these guys are talking about too much important stuff.
Yeah. There's actually my son trying to FaceTime me.
Oh, good. I'm glad it's on your end, not mine.
Yeah.
No, that's what I tell. And I'm the same way, you know, it's a cool tool to use to promote. I mean, that's the main thing I tell people is if you have another business that's making you money, you know, this is all great because you're using more of a marketing tool than anything.
Exactly.
You know?
Well, and that's what it is. It's a marketing and a lifestyle, you know, being able to go do the hunts and go do things. You know, that, like, I would never have been able to go some of the places I've gone if it wasn't for TV.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
You know, so I'm very blessed and thankful on that side because it's allowed me to, you know, experience a lot of things that were amazing. Like, I would have probably never went to Alaska 6 years in a row. You know, I'd have never been able to afford it.
Yeah, yeah.
Without it. You know, so. And it's fun. You get to meet some really cool people. This industry, it's small and tight knit. It really is.
Oh yeah. You take the coyote side and it's even smaller, you know?
Well, that's like houndsmen. It's like high school. You love them, but they're the biggest complainers there are.
So what's next? You got spring bear coming up, and then you kind of just roll through the rest of the summer and then start getting ready for elk, I suppose, huh?
Yeah. So I got, like I said, I'm going to try to run a cat or two here before the middle of April, but middle of April, I'll start running bears. And then, run bears off and on. I do some summer backcountry stuff. But elk season, I'll run bears all the way until September. Start nice. With elk in September, and then I do a lot of mule deer stuff in the fall. So it's all, that's the cool thing, is there's something to hunt all the time, buddy.
Yeah. Well, I don't hunt all the time, unfortunately. I don't know, though. I kind of like it. For me, I hunt coyotes so hard for 5 months straight. I'm like, and anybody that's ever hunted with me understands, like, it's a different style of hunting. It's, mm-hmm. it's just the, I don't know. It's a lot. Right. So I'm like, so honestly, by the time I'm done, I'm like, oh, man, I love killing coyotes more than anything else. But by the time first March rolls around, I'm kind of like, phew. All right. Yeah.
It's nice to have that.
I love coaching baseball. Baseball is like my second favorite thing to do. So at least I'm moving into that now. And then I'll be all about that. And I'm not going to lie, even that last month of coyote season, I start thinking about baseball a little bit, I'm sure your mind does the same thing, right? You start to think about bears, and then you start thinking about elk before the elk's even here,
Uh-huh. I'm the same way. Come about July, I'm ready for elk.
Yeah.
My neck starts swelling and I'm ready to go. And then, as soon as that snow starts flying, I'm ready for cats.
Yeah.
And then like right now I'm ready for bears. it's that constant, but it's good because it keeps you entertained and keeps you, wanting more.
Well, 100%. I love the looking forward, having something to always look forward to. I think that's huge, man. I think it keeps you motivated. I don't know. I just, I'm not envious by any stretch of people that have the same job for 12 months, out of the year. Like, you have this other stuff to look forward to on the weekends and stuff like that, but it's the same, It's like, I've always been fortunate enough, like you, to have a job where it's like, okay, my job changes, with the seasons, and I wouldn't know what to do if I had to go work for, 12 months straight doing the same damn thing,
I'm right there with you. Or if I had to go sit in an office, oh man.
Oh yeah. There you go. Yeah. Good luck with that one.
Uh-huh. Big guy be tearing something apart.
Well, bud, it's been fun, man. What if somebody wants to catch up with your new show that's gonna be Pursuit over on YouTube, social media, what's all the best way for those guys to catch up with you?
Laramie Sasquatch Miller on everything. So YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Laramie Sasquatch Miller. You get to see some of the crazy things.
Come on, go back. I want to see this armadillo thing again. So, if you make it back down south and shoot an armadillo, I want to see that on YouTube because I got to check that out.
There you go.
It's fascinated me. See, if you shot it perfectly through the side of the shell, you could almost you'd have a little drinking hole outside of the shell, right?
Yeah, just slurp it dry.
Yeah. It would scramble it up for you in there already. You wouldn't even have to really stir it. Well, bud, it's always fun, man.
Yeah.
Always enjoy hearing about your adventures. I'm sure we'll definitely have to get back on here in the future and bullshit again, so.
Sounds good, buddy. I appreciate it. It's always fun.
You bet. Well, I appreciate everybody listening to another episode here at Eastman's Predator Pros. Your reviews, your comments have made this the number one predator hunting podcast out there, so I greatly appreciate that. If you're looking for more information about myself, you can go to my website, which is coyotecraze.com. Although my coyote schools won't be launching until August sometime. You can get information on those. Got some upcoming stuff coming up that you want to be part of there. So you can visit my website. Plus, you can find me on Instagram as well, just at Jeff Nimnick. But obviously, we can't do this without the sponsors, so I need to thank them. We have Sig Optics, Swagger Bipods, Hornady, Lucky Duck Predator Calls, Silencer Central, Cryptek, Onyx Hunt, and of course, Eastman's for bringing this all to you guys. If you're a big game hunter, I'm sure you've already got tags applied for, huh? Probably, yeah.
Yep.
Tags are in. I don't know. I don't apply for tags, but
we got about another month. In
maybe
Colorado,
a month to get them in.
New Mexico, you only got this week. You better get them in.
But I know Eastman's has this tag hub deal they talk about a lot, to kind of help you pick the right unit if you're wanting to travel around and find a unit, you know. So, what if guys are looking to book a hunt with you, Laramie? What do you have your website they can look?
So it'll be up. I'm actually doing the website right now. It'll be up at laramiemiller.com.
Laramiemiller.com. Easy enough. Simple. Nobody's going to steal that one from you.
Nope. Hopefully not. There's only one big ugly guy like me.
Well, sounds good. Well, once again, like I said, you can head over to eastmans.com. You can find information on that. Check out Laramie's coming website as well. So once again, thank you guys for listening, and we will catch you next time right here on the Eastman's Predator Pros Podcast.